the Death Star, they get pulled into the docking bay of the Death Star. The surface area of the Death Star is the size of Lake Superior. The Death Star is 99 miles across. What are the odds that you get pulled into the Death Star in the place where Princess Leia is and in the place where the reactor is and everything like that? And then the other thing they were talking about is Luke goes down through the trench to drop the bomb inside of the hole. Mm-mm. Why does he go through the trench? It's space. You could just, like, drop down on top of it. You don't have to go through the trench. You say, there's the trench. Boom. I'm on it.
No, but it's like, you know, it's... oh, shoot. Never mind.
It's just like shooting womp rats back home.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I like the Family Guy.
And it's T-16.
Where they go, are there any weak points? And they go, well, there is this hole. They go, well, put a piece of plywood over it. He goes, I mean, it's kind of for aesthetic purposes. And you go, just cover it up.
They're going to get estimates.
Yeah, they're going to get estimates. We'll put it out for bidding. Mm-hmm. Oh, anyway, we had an exciting day. Shall we count it down and get it started?
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, and you're listening to Stamp Show here today.
It's a send up. Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show here today, episode number 49. I'm sitting here with Kaz, Jeff, Don, and I'm your host, Jessica. We're also going to be joined by the interviews I did at CESCAL 2015. So this is our little... We're going to share our memories of CESCAL and our personal highlights. And then you're going to hear interviews that I did at the show later on.
Did you interview Steve Riddell?
No.
Oh, because he's a dealer. And he wanted to be mentioned on the podcast. So I said, here it is. And he said, that kind of isn't very impressive and changed his mind. I said, too late.
Yeah, you mentioned him.
Yeah.
Consider yourself mentioned, Steve.
Okay, so who wants to start us off with their highlight from CESCAL?
I got sick at CESCAL. You know, and
I
apologize. I apologize. I'm going to be
don't
like,
say that.
I'm probably going to do a couple coughs, and those will get edited out, and I probably sound really scratchy. And we got feedback from a person who said, "Who's the guy on the podcast that sounds like Kermit?"
Yeah,
and I said, "Well, that's probably me." But every time, and I've been going to CESCAL for like 10 years. And it seems like every time I leave that Hilton, I get sick.
Well, I think part of it's because it's next to LAX. You have so many international people there bringing their bugs from all over the freaking world. So I have the feeling that has a lot to do with it, actually.
But yeah. You guys didn't get sick. It's just me.
I got inoculated against bird flu.
Oh, and SARS.
You didn't get the Ebola vaccine?
Come on.
Anything fun that happened to you there, other than it? You found it sickening?
Oh, I, let's see, the exhibits, there were two exhibits that I found very interesting. One was heraldic lions, and I found out there is a display category, because this heraldic lions had stamps, had postcards, had coins, had pictures. It was really ultra cool. And I never went back to see what the award it got was. Maybe you can comment on it, because you guys now are like the in crowd.
Yeah. Well, there was one that I saw. I was running through too quick to stop and look, but I swear the only thing in the exhibit was the front art face of postcards.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't see any stamps in it at all.
That was a postcard exhibit.
That's the one Carl was pissed off about.
Why?
Because it's a new thing they're doing where you can just show the front of the postcards and not the stamps on the back, and it's considered an exhibit, and I guess has no philatelic value. They call it the APS, the American Paper Society, now because of that.
Huh. Okay.
Interesting. Well, Jessica, you found that kind of inspiring. She told me it was giving her some ideas. So you can at least meet him halfway and do it like 50-50 front and back.
Well, I was thinking about showing the back and then showing a picture of the front.
No, vice versa. Show... Oh, I'm sorry. You're Hold on. Which one is the front? Is the front the picture?
The front is the picture. Yeah.
Okay. Show the front and then show a picture of the back with the stamp on it. Like miniature little picture down in the corner. Say, here, it's got a stamp on it.
Well, what she wanted to do, actually, because her goal over the last year was to try to find the oldest known or possible first day cancel of the Avalon post office in Catalina. So she could do an exhibit on early cancels from Catalina Island.
That's my idea. You can't have it.
I know. It's Jessica's. It's hers.
And to answer your question,
Don will steal it because she loves Catalina Island.
The lion, he won a Vermeil?
Vermeil. That's good.
And the American Association of Philatelic Exhibitors Gold Award of Honor.
Good.
So he cleaned up a little bit.
Yeah.
Jessica made sure there were a lot of awards this year. She hunted, tracked down anybody that ever sent an award in the past and said, give us something.
That was a lot of work. Because well, a lot probably, of people don't like giving their email out, so I had to like write people.
Snail mail. Oh, we had to pick the day we left, Wednesday afternoon when we left. We had to go to the post office in our hometown first because the APS overnighted their awards. And they got there the day we were leaving for the show.
Which, by the way, back up a little bit. Tell everybody what you guys did at the show, because you're alluding to it, but you're not actually saying it.
Well, I was just a volunteer helper, but Jessica?
I'm the new awards chair for SESCAL, and Jeff is the token gopher. They're like, two-for-one special? Your husband's coming, right? Yes. Does he have a good good arms, good back? Yeah. Well, we'll find something for him to do, so...
Hey, I got to sit at the on the podium for the awards banquet, so I don't care.
Ooh.
Yeah, I guess it was it's a position of honor to be set at the front, and that's where we were.
So what were your duties?
I had to collect awards from every society that offers them to WPS shows, World Philatelic shows. And it was harder than I thought it would be because I got a couple emails saying, are you spamming me? Is this spam? Who are you?
Because they didn't recognize you.
Yeah, because I'm new. And they don't like reading my description of who I was, saying I'm replacing so-and-so and hello and how are you. And I guess my email may have been too long. So
TLDR.
They didn't read it. Yeah.
So, my favorite story came from the awards banquet, at which Jessica was responsible for passing out the awards.
That was me.
And to give you an idea, you're never supposed to tell what a woman's age is, but it's somewhere between 10 and 40. Basically, far younger than the previous person, who was mid-80s when she retired and stopped doing it. So, she set everything up before the ceremony. All the exhibitors came in. They go, whoa, who's this young lady? She's wearing a nice, conservative black cocktail dress. She had her hair done and everything. That was not what they were used to at all. So they'd come up to her to accept their award. And if you can visualize these 80-year-old guys, incredibly awkward with somebody less than half their age, trying to figure out how to pose with her for a picture, their hands sitting there floating, lower back, upper back, shoulder, what do I do? One guy took so long, and the silence was so awkward trying to figure out how to position himself, that somebody finally shouted out from the rest of the dinner, they said, just pose with the pretty girl. And everybody got a really good laugh.
What else did they laugh at?
Oh, Jessica's looking at this. I wasn't going to bring it up if you weren't going to.
Well, I mean, it's a good way. I'm definitely be memorable.
So you want me to tell it?
I guess I'll tell them.
All right, go ahead.
So there was a single frame award, which I bought this really nice 24 karat Tiffany box for. It was like a world diagram or something like that.
Yeah, it's like a globe map kind of thing.
Yeah, it was really nice little trinket box. And then the... what's the name of the
Oh, I don't
Carl's
know.
Group? What's the name? What's he the president of?
The
Federated.
Yeah, Federated Stamp Shows.
No, the LA group. They're the LA Stamp Society.
Okay. Federated. Okay. The Carl's the president of this wonderful society in LA, and they provide a very, very well engraved, beautiful, I think it was mahogany, clock or timepiece, miniature grandfather clock status.
It was like 14, 15 inches high.
Yeah, it was very, very nice. So they call the winner of this award, and I hand them the grandfather clock, and it was supposed to be the little tiny Tiffany
it would have fit in the palm of your hand
box. And so I hand the guy the giant clock. He kind of walks off, and a couple of words later kind of raises his hand and says, "This is for a different award because it's engraved." And I don't think I was supposed to get this. And then Carl chimes up. He's like, yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing. And that we kind of gave the wrong award for that. And so I took it back and put it where it's supposed to go and took the little tiny trinket box and gave it to him instead.
Everybody had a good laugh. It was funny because when the guy picked up the clock, his eyes got all big. He's like, whoa. It's a $50 box versus a $1,000 clock. It's a big difference.
So
do they get to keep the clock? Or?
Yeah.
Well, no, the guy that won it got to keep it.
The guy that really won it got to keep it. Yeah, it's a yearly award that they provide that's engraved and everything.
Holy mackerel.
So yeah, I kind of gave a giant award to someone supposed to get a little tiny award.
And it was really cute because when he came up to switch them, it was dead silent. Nobody was saying a word. And then Jessica kind of got sick of the silence. I think people were anticipating, you know, is she going to be embarrassed? What's she going to do?
Start crying.
So she just turns around and goes, "It's my first time, okay?" And everybody just cracked up. So there's people, they're going to hang on to that memory for a long time.
Yeah. The girl that gives away giant awards to little awards.
Yes.
I'll get it right next year. And I'll know what I'm doing a little better. So that was our highlights. Don was actually gracious in helping me assemble some of these awards. That was a blessing. I'd like to thank her on air.
No problem.
Okay, so our stamp news, you actually have to go to our website to view at the www.gradingmatters.com and click on the link to our YouTube channel. And we had a very gracious patron come in and open their uninverted $2 sheet. We'll call him Nick. He didn't want his full name. In front of our Periscope camera. And so you can view. And they're going to give you a hint, which you must watch the movie to get, as to how to tell if you have one or not before you open it.
Yeah, we were kind of afraid that people would think, oh, well, they just stuck it in an envelope and cut it out again. It's like, no, this really was a sealed envelope that we opened up, and we knew there was an inverted Jenny in it, or a right-side-up Jenny in it.
Yeah, the video, the first 10 seconds, the guy says, "Hi, I'm Nick so-and-so from such-and-such."
Well, and give him Goldmart, everybody.
Yeah, Goldmart.com. He didn't want us to say that. He's the president of Goldmart.com. He said, "This is Nick from Goldmart.com. I'm here with Cash and PSE. This is an uninverted Jenny sheet." And he held up the sealed envelope, opened it. Sure enough, that's what was inside. He knew it was there.
And he'll reveal that in the video.
Yeah, if you watch the video, you get to learn how he knew.
Yes. And if you want to just pull it up on YouTube, what's the title on YouTube?
It's on Professional Stamp Experts YouTube channel, so it's the newest video on there.
Oh, yeah, so just go to YouTube and search for Professional Stamp Experts, and it should come up then.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so we do have a couple of corrections that we want to issue before we move on to the interviews. We will start with, Cash.
Well, I don't have any corrections this time, but I have two very interesting things that have to do with stamp collecting. One of them is U.S. versus Wilson. It happened at the beginning of the 18th century, and Andrew Jackson pardoned a fellow who robbed the U.S. mail, and the person refused the pardon, and Andrew Jackson took it to the Supreme Court to force the person to get the pardon.
The person is in the criminal refused the pardon?
The criminal refused the pardon.
What?
Not
the
only that,
crap?
But it was a death penalty case.
Was he more honorable than that? Or
it doesn't give anything really. it's devoid of a lot of comment of why, but he refused it. It went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said you have to deliver a pardon. For a pardon to be considered deliver, it has to be accepted by the person on the other end. Since there was no acceptance, there was no delivery. And this happened one time, I forget, who was the other person who turned down the pardon?
It was later on.
Yeah, it was like Clinton or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, yep, you can't just pardon a guy, it's actually got to be accepted. Wow. Anyway, he refused the pardon of Andrew Jackson for robbing the U.S. mails. The punishment was death. He was hung because he didn't accept the pardon. And it's U.S. versus Wilson. Somebody out there look it up or something, because I couldn't find anything as to, you know, did the guy, was he like really strongly morally attached to this or something? I don't know. The second thing is on TED Talks, and there's a person named Charles Fleischer, Fleischer. The title is All Things Are Moleeds, Moleeds. It has a really great stamp topic to it, very, very funny, great. It's only 15 minutes. Go do a search on TED Talks. You will enjoy it.
Okay, so I actually have a couple of corrections myself this time. I spent some time with Major Guy Gasser at SESCAL this year at his table, and he had listened to a couple of episodes of our podcast, including, I don't remember the number, but it was the APS Stamp Show episode, part one, I think he said. One of the two.
It wasn't two, because he listened to two and he was pissed off.
That's right, he was annoyed because he had to listen to two episodes. So we had revealed his little secret that HB Philatelics, the name of his stamp company, stands for Honey Bunny Philatelics, and I had said that that was his nickname for his wife. And he corrected me and said that that isn't the case. Actually, that is his wife's nickname for him. And that his nickname for her is Wobie, W-O-H-B. So if anybody, can anybody figure out why?
Wife of Honey Bunny?
Hey, Dawn got it, exactly.
What do I get?
The satisfaction of knowing you were right.
Yeah, priceless.
But he said that when they were dating, they both liked the nickname Honey Bunny for each other. But didn't want to get confused going back and forth. So when they got married, he switched his to Wobie instead. So I thought that was really cute, and he wanted me to clarify that for the record. So, and then the other one is actually, I have a correction on myself from the last episode. An apology to Scott, who isn't here today. He kept trying to correct. We were going through a muddy pile of pronunciations of Hispanic names.
Yes.
And yes. I kept insisting that Mr. Sarah, the famous California Junipero founder of Sarah. Missions, that his name is supposed to be pronounced Junipero. And Scott kept saying Junipero, Junipero. And I kept cutting him off. And so I was like, oh, okay, now I got to look it up, see who's right. He was actually closer than I am. The actual Spanish pronunciation is Junipero. So him saying Junipero was actually far more accurate. So that's my correction. Scott was right, and I wasn't. So
there was one, and you'll see it if you pull up this Moleeds, the Charles Fleischer one. They go sort of interesting things on stamps, and they had one where, who was it, Johann Kepler? And instead of Johann, it was Juan.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, no, his name is Johann, not Juan.
It was like a Spanish stamp. Oh my
gosh. Yeah, it was on a Spanish stamp, like right. Portugal or something mm-hmm. like that. And so Junipero Sarah... You know, sorry, dude.
And I have one little thing, tidbit I discovered recently. Another pop culture icon that collects stamps, Stan Smith.
Why is that?
The lead singer of Green Day?
No, not quite. American Dad, Stan Smith.
Oh, really?
He sends a little alien guy out for the newest stamp, saying, I need to add this to my collection. Go pick it up for me from the post office.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny. He makes Roger go and buy his stamps.
Yeah. So
cute.
Seth MacFarlane gave a little bump to a stamp collector's little Easter egg there.
Thank you, Seth.
That's funny. So, okay, so we know that Bart is a stamp collector from The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And now Stan Smith from
American Dad.
From American Dad. I swear there's somebody from Family Guy that collects stamps.
No, they make fun of it. They say, let's collect stamps, and then they shoot each other in the face because it's tedious.
That's right. So we have three modern cartoon stamp references. Two of them are good. One of them not so much.
One of them in the negative aspect. I hope you enjoy the following interviews that I collected at SESCAL 2015. I'm sitting here with John Weigel, and he's going to explain his group, and he's going to, it's a mouthful, so I'm going to let him say it.
The Federated Philatelic Clubs of Southern California, and its main project is sponsoring SESCAL, which is the annual stamp exhibition of Southern California.
Now, he's a fellow stamp collector, so what exactly can I find in your collection?
All kinds of strange things. I collect U.S. and Canada as countries. My big interests are really postal history of Ventura County and official seals of the world. The Ventura County collection I thought should be simple. I was born there, and I met a city councilwoman at the time who collected it. And I thought, okay, this couldn't be too hard. There are eight cities at the time, and, you know, it shouldn't be difficult to find those. And I kept thinking that way until I found the first book of post offices that had been there and realized, no, this was more than I thought. But it's been a lot of fun because, you know, when you're born and raised there, there's an interest in the history anyway. So this just helped me do that. The official seals are things that look like stamps but have no face value. And they're used primarily to either seal mail that was damaged in transit or mail that was sent with no contents, so the flap's not closed and they slap a label on it, you know, received, well, the cancel received without contents. And that. And I've got some first day covers like that, which I like because it gives them character, but I'm sure the first day cover collectors like that. Wreck that.
So what's the jewel of your collection right now?
Ooh. Maybe something that I got at the last APS show in Riverside. It's official seals used as sensor labels. And I can't remember the country it is, but it's only been done by a few countries. And I had never, I think I'd seen pictures of one, and I ran into a dealer who had two, and they were different seals, if I remember right, so I ended up buying both of them. Cringe, cringe.
So it's kind of, they just use whatever was lying around kind of situation?
Very often that's true. There are seals that are just brown tape. Sometimes I saw one at the show today that is just a white label spread across the envelope that says received unsealed or received damaged. I've forgotten the exact wording. And that's handwritten. So, you know, there is a catalog of the printed seals, but obviously you can't catalog all the things that people have used to seal something that were just, you know, maybe the scotch tape in the office at the time.
So what is your earliest memory of stamp collecting?
Oh, boy, I am so bad on dates. I started, I think, in like fifth or sixth grade, so it would have been just dealing with whatever we could find at the time. And it seems to me that one of the teachers at the elementary school started a stamp club, and I thought, oh, man, that sounds like it might be interesting. I don't know. And it was. And then I did, like so many other collectors, collected for a while, dropped out during high school and college and my military career as a draftee. And then when I got out of the Army, I got back into it and have been collecting since.
So here at SESCO, what's the best thing you've seen so far that if you had $1 million and didn't care, what would you have bought?
Let me think. One of the dealers has a lot of other foreign official seals material that I would like to have bought, but I bought some of the key items and then had to pass because even the richest person runs out of money. But I would have bought probably his entire stock of official seals if I could have afforded it.
So can you tell us a little bit more about the group you belong to and how other clubs can join?
It's, as I said, the Federated Philatelic Clubs of Southern California. Even when you're involved with it, the name is hard. Clubs dues are $10 a year, and that money basically goes to some basic mailing out of, well, dues notices for one thing. And then we have an electronic newsletter that comes out usually just before SESCAL and somewhere after so that the big news is there. It used to be a quarterly, but that kind of died because the quarterly shows where the Federation meetings were held stopped existing. And, there aren't that many shows in the area as opposed to the monthly bourses.
Do you have any advice for anyone thinking about collecting stamps or new collectors?
Don't approach it as an investment. Start out with it as a hobby, and you may well stay with it as a hobby, but find out if you like it and if you have fun at it. And if you start deciding, this is too much like work, or I can't see the stamps or whatever, then go do something else, because the hobby should be fun first. Then if you want to think of it as an investment, you approach it differently. You have to see what the people are buying, and then you can't tell into the forecast the future, but you try to figure out, okay, what is going to have a staying power. There's advice that I think every collector gets, and we all agree, yeah, that's a great idea, and that's buy the best copy of the most expensive thing you can afford first, because you can always fill in the holes with the inexpensive stuff anytime, because the cheap stuff is going to stay cheap. Most of us, however, if we use a printed album, want to fill a lot of spaces, so we buy the cheap stuff. And you buy enough of it, it becomes a chunk of money, and then wonder why we don't have the expensive material, or when we go to sell it, why we don't get a big amount for it. And because, I went to the library and I found out that all my stamps catalog 25 cents, so I multiplied 0.25 times the 10,000 stamps I have and think I'm going to get that much money. Nah, not likely, because people have to remember that minimum catalog value is to cover the cost of a dealer getting it and sorting it and having it so that when you walk in and say, I want stamp whatever Scott catalog number, he or she can go to the shelf, pull it out and say, here, pick the one you like best. But the chances are that the stamps that are at 25 cents today, the minimum catalog value will remain at the minimum catalog value, whatever it is in 50 years.
I think that's the best explanation I've heard of that 25 cents Scott catalog value yet. Because people demand it sometimes, yeah. And I'm just like, that's kind of more like a courtesy price. It's not really like what you might get on the open market, right.
Well, and people also forget that dealers have to make a profit too, and if they pay you full Scott catalog value for your collection, then that means they're going to have to sell it above Scott catalog value to make sense. And unless your collection is the superb thing that always sells above Scott catalog value, you're not going to get that. And besides, even if you had the superb issues of all those 25 cent stamps, you're still not going to get that.
Yeah, for sure.
If you want big money back, you have to put big money in. Unless you're just really lucky into an area that I got really cheap, and then 6 years into it, everybody else wanted to collect it. I know a fellow in our club, which is the Ventura County Philatelic Society, who collects china, and he's been doing it for years. He freely admits there is no way today that he could get the collection he has because the prices have jumped so much. But that doesn't happen with every guy.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm sitting here with Cam Holtz and Ed Kawasaki of the International Society for Japanese Philately. And they're going to tell us why that's their passion and a little bit about themselves and how to join their club. So let's start with Ken. What is your earliest memory of stamp collecting?
Well, somewhere around age 6, an uncle who was a collector introduced me to it. He gave me an old album and a few stamps, which I taped into the album with cellophane tape, thereby destroying them. But for some reason, this hobby stuck, particularly when I was in the area of 10 to 15 years old. Dropped it for a while, and then as an adult, it became a passion.
Okay, so Ed, what was your earliest memory?
Well, when I was probably about the same age and would visit my grandfather, who was Japanese, he would give me some of his envelopes of letters that he got from Japan. So that kind of got me started into collecting stamps and starting with Japanese stamps.
Well, that's a memory you'll never soon forget. Okay, so Japanese philately, I understand, is a very tricky topic to collect because there's a lot of tourist stamps out there. So how did that come around to be?
Well, let's start back at the beginning. The earliest Japanese stamps were issued in 1870. Relatively scarce, not too many of them printed. Japan at that time was still a fairly isolated nation. Maybe 25 or 30 years later, a lot of tourists started visiting Japan, and at that time stamp collecting was a fairly interesting hobby, just an emerging hobby, if you will. And many printers were interested in offering Japanese stamps to these tourists as keepsakes, things to take home. But the old stamps were fairly scarce, hard to find, and so those that they couldn't find sufficient quantities of, they just decided to forge. They made all sorts of fakes of them, and many of these fakes are still circulating today. And because the stamps are written in characters that Westerners usually can't read, Japanese characters, it's pretty hard for them to determine which are fakes based on the writing on the stamps. So these things have remained in circulation and are a bit of a problem. These sheets that the dealers sold were called tourist sheets, and there were a lot of varieties of them, and we've even written some articles about those tourist sheets for our journal.
Okay, so why Japanese philately?
Well, probably because it started with my grandfather, who was Japanese, and part of my Japanese heritage. That got to be part of my passion. It's where my interest started in stamps. Of course, it broadened a bit since then with collecting a U.S. and the rest of the world, but as I get older, it also tends to narrow a bit, and I'm getting back more to collecting specifically Japanese stamps.
So what is the jewel of your collection right now?
I'm not sure I have any particular jewels. I'm expanding into Japanese revenue stamps, which is a new area for me. So it's an area that I can explore and learn more about.
So what's the jewel in your collection?
Well, my collection is largely sold off now. I'm getting older, and since my youngsters are not interested in it, I figured I would enjoy my collection again by preparing it for sale. And it has been sold. But what's maybe the jewel that I would wish to have had is the collection of the former president of our society and editor of our journal. His name was Bob Spaulding. He passed away at the end of 2013. But before he died, his guardian asked us to sell his collection, and that collection was an absolute jewel. It sold for over $1 million. And there were just wonderful items in it. For example, covers that showed very early Japanese postal history, showed the way European countries opened post offices in Japan and arranged for both Japanese and European stamps to be on those envelopes. Some of those sold, when we sold Dr. Spaulding's collection, for over $50,000 a piece. And all I can say is I would love to have had a chance to own those. Too bad.
That's one of the biggest questions I get asked is, are stamps worth anything? So that answers your question right there. There are stamps out there that are worth something. So about collecting and history, what have you learned since starting collecting Japanese stamps about your history?
Well, probably one of the things to note is, as Ken mentioned, many of the early stamps are forgeries. They're copies that were sold to tourists. So it's important to look at those and to try and identify them. Some of them have marks on there that say that they are copies, so they can be easily identified. But many of them do not. So the challenge is to try and figure out which of those are genuine and which of those are the copies. And we do have a lot of literature that we have in the ISJP and some monographs that are available to help people try and identify those. So I find that a good place to start to try and identify those stamps. So that's one of the fun things and also one of the challenging things about collecting Japanese stamps.
So if someone has a question about the history of their stamp or if it's authentic or something, you guys can help with that at your meetings, or how does that work? Like a mentorship or something?
We have a number of ways of identifying those forgeries. As Ed just mentioned, some of them are called signed forgeries because they actually say on them that they're reproductions. But it says it in Japanese characters, so it might be difficult for Westerners to recognize them. Aside from that, we have several different expertization services. A number of our society members show up at shows and can identify forgeries, but we also have a certificate service where you send the stamp in to an expert who will photograph it, certify it as genuine or not genuine, and send it back to you with a certificate so stating. We also have some informal ones. For example, these days you could scan the stamp on your scanner, send a computer image to one of our experts. The expert will be able to say, yes, that is a forgery for sure, but cannot certify it as genuine just on the basis of a picture. But that's very helpful because it helps to quickly weed out many of the forgeries. So there are lots of mechanisms available.
Yeah, there are a couple of other ways that people can get information. If they're here in Southern California, they can come to one of our Southern California chapter meetings, and they can get information about that by either going to the ISJP website or sending me an email, and I will provide information. And my email is ed@epk.co, or they can go to the website, isjp.org, and get information, a wealth of information that they can explore.
I'd like to add one more thing to it. This society has also prepared, issued, and sold a CD which describes all of the forgeries that were known at the time of the CD, and only a few more have surfaced ever since. And so this CD is an extremely useful tool for somebody who's pretty serious about trying to learn whether their stamps are genuine or forgeries.
Yeah, me and my husband were sorting through a collection of Japanese stamps, and there's definitely a difference in quality on some of the forgeries. There's, like, it's so faded from being reproduced so many times, it loses a lot of the detail. That's what I noticed just right off the bat. And the different printers used such, it's kind of like inks that are just lying around, not really like a quality ink. But they're still really hard to tell.
Some of the forgeries are really of a poor quality. That they tend to be blurry, and I think it's the German forger that in particular has some poor quality paper and reproduction.
But don't let that be deceptive. There are some very hard-to-detect forgeries, and especially for stamps that are of substantial value, you need to get a certificate in order to verify that they're genuine, or you're only fooling yourself.
If money was no object, What would you have bought at Sescal this year?
Well, I'd probably go for some of the genuines that I have forgeries. All of my earliest stamps of Japan are forgeries. So I don't own the early ones, so I would early genuine ones. So I would certainly try and fill out my collection with some genuine stamps.
In my case, inasmuch as I've sold my collection, I can speculate on what I might have wanted to buy in the past. And I earlier mentioned the collection of Dr. Spaulding, who was our editor and president for many years. And his collection was an absolute gem, and I would have been tremendously honored to have had that collection as my own.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time again. And hope to see you guys soon, and hope the show is as much fun as you guys look like you're having at this table.
Well, thank you very much. It was my pleasure to be here.
For me as well. Thanks very much.
Okay, I'm sitting here with Carl Schaff II, the president of the Sescal Stamp Show, and he's going to tell us a little bit about how it went this year. So what are we looking at as far as smiles this year?
A lot of smiles. Went very, very well. The Sescal has, as any stamp show has, or stamp exhibit has, we've got problems. Everybody has small little hiccups during the course of the time. But overall, it was a very successful weekend. A lot of happy exhibitors. We had, I understand, over 20 golds in our exhibit room, which is tremendous for a national show. It shows that my exhibits chair, Howard Green, did another great job of getting good exhibitors, and my secretary to the judge got good judges. And the combination means the vast majority are happy. But then we go to the other side of people, and I'm not mentioning names, whose last time they showed they got a vermeil and now they got a silver. That is common. I didn't hear any double jumps down or double jumps up, which makes me happy. But I didn't go to the judge's critique. I try to stay away from there these days.
I was warned that people would give back their ribbons, and I was not to be offended by that.
No, people give back ribbons. Some exhibitors have, if you exhibit 10, 15 times a year, and some people do, they travel, have a good time, they don't need to have ribbons, and they know that the different committees are always looking to keep their stock up. And, you know, if you're giving, 30 to 50 ribbons out a year, it can be a small added expense, not anything astronomical, but you add all these little expenses together, and the show gets to be expensive, at least for, you know, the committee or the organization.
What does the future of Sescal look like?
Like all shows, we are nervous. National level shows have been having problems. Sescal is on good, solid footing. We have contracts here at the Hilton for next year, which is 16 and 17, already signed and in the books. We have great hotel rates, though it's higher than it was for the last period of time. Inflation, thank you, the politics of the day.
Obama. It's a joke.
let's not call it anyway. We've had inflation for a long time.
Yeah.
But our room rate this year was at 91, and that's for a major hotel in a major city by an airport. I think we have, it goes to 109 next year. That's after negotiations. There are people who are not happy with this venue. There are people who think it was wonderful. But when you put the whole package together, I'm not ready to move out of this hotel. I certainly have a search committee. I've had one for 6 years, more or less. And which we would always jump ship if we could get a better deal. But it's hard to get a better deal. So we're happy and we're solid. We could always use an angel to help finance the issues of the day to keep it going. But we do have an angel in PSLA, the Philatelic Society of Los Angeles, who helps cover some of the expenses. As I sit and listen to the conversations from other people, the vast majority of the national level shows are cash negative now, and they all need support. And when I talk of support, they need dealers to actually make the effort to go to these shows. They need exhibitors to go to the extra show during the course of the year to exhibit. And they need the local community to get out and the stamp community to come out and spend money. Sescal has its own set of problems with that. Most of the national level shows don't have as many local, and I keep using the term show, national level stamp exhibitions versus local bourses. And as always, I should define terms. A bourse is a collection of dealers put together to have a venue where they sell stamps. An exhibition has frames of exhibits, and you've learned about that. And to be a national level exhibition, you have to have a certain number of frames every year. And if you don't meet that minimum standard, you are put on probation. And if you miss it twice, you're not a national WPS show. World Philately stamp show. And that becomes important. I'm a little hoarse right now because I've been talking for four days, and it just hasn't ended. The problem is never getting me to start. It's getting me to shut up.
Ah.
So that's what's going on.
So are you going to have a – I understand there were no youth awards this year awarded. They were available. So next year, do you hope to bring in some more youth exhibitors?
Important question. There are too few youth exhibitors, and getting them to the show, getting them to know that there's a show open available is difficult. Every few years in the last 6 years, 8 years, we have had some youth exhibitors, but never more than two or three. And yes, I would love to have youth. I'd love to have novice exhibitors.
We had five this year, I believe, or four.
We had four novice exhibitor awards given this year. A novice is the first time coming in. And this is the highest number of novice awards we've had in a long time, which gives me hope. One of the novice awards was given, no names mentioned. We in the higher echelon of the philatelic community have been haranguing this man for 20 years to exhibit. And he did very well, and it was nice to have him do it. And it's nice to have, you know, first-time exhibitor who's just out of being a youth exhibiting. And youth exhibits obviously are important. Obvious, it's difficult to get them because it's a level of stamp collecting that most collectors don't achieve. And to get youth to put together an exhibit, we've got to be pushing for it. And same with the novice exhibitors. It's a level of stamp collecting the vast, vast majority do not get involved with. But it opens up doors to enjoyment and frustrations and betterment of your personal collection and the knowledge in the community.
Dare I say that a youth exhibit at ThyssCal could possibly get an award of some kind? It's a pretty good place to get your feet wet.
Well, exhibitors get awards. It is very, very rare where you would get a certificate of participation. Awards start at bronze, going up, bronze, silver, vermeil, gold. And then the golds compete for the best of the show, a grand, which is the best, and a reserve grand, which is number two. It's the top grands on the national society shows, exhibits, compete for the Champion of Champions. And the ThyssCal Grands have won the Champion Champion in recent past, and we hope our top-notch people get top-notch national. There are problems winning, but that's a different question if you want to go that route.
What else was a highlight at the show that you definitely want to see? People really have to come and see this to experience the stamp show to its entirety.
Well, one, if you've never experienced a stamp exhibition, the national level shows are a good place to get your feet wet. There are regional shows that are less than national that do have exhibits, but the quality of exhibits is not as strong. And that's because most novice and junior exhibitors will start at that level because, you know, they feel, oh, I don't want to go national because, you know, I don't want to be embarrassed. No reason to be embarrassed. I mean, so you don't do all that well. You've got a learning curve. Everybody has a learning curve when you try something new. But as regular stamp collectors, a national level show gives them an experience of seeing societies, seeing meetings, seeing higher level dealers, seeing exhibits, and you don't get that with your local clubs and your local regional shows.
Okay, so how would an interested person get to know more about ThyssCal?
Well, we have our own website at ThyssCal.org, which gives you the basic ThyssCal information of when, where. Of course, if you go on it right now, you'll probably see ThyssCal 2015, because it'll be a while before we start updating it for next year. We also have a Facebook page. So I guess you Google or whatever ThyssCal and you'll find us. So those are two ways. And if you go on the site, you can find my contact information as chairman and the contact information for the committee chair people, including Howard Green, who's our exhibits chair, and very important if you're an exhibitor, you want to get your exhibit in early. And Fred Gregory, who's my bourse chair, which is even more important for those dealers who want to come to ThyssCal, who should come to ThyssCal, and how to contact and be here for next year.
So what's the experience at ThyssCal like as a dealer? What are the rates and ins and outs of the hotel and stuff like that?
I'd simply say contact Fred Gregory for the actual rates for a table, but the table rates includes the room. We give breakfast vouchers, and we also provide box lunches for the dealers, all part of it, and parking. So it's a package that is quite competitive to the other national level shows.
That parking voucher sounds pretty important considering parking in LA is like well above the average, national average as far as parking.
There are probably places in this country where you could get a hotel room for the weekend cheaper than the parking rates for some of the hotels in the area. So that's been part of what's going on. But most of the major shows, there's a parking freight that has to be paid to either the collector or the dealer or both. And the committee members, but that's where the venue is and what's available and what they offer. I have a couple of new committee member people who have just been wonderful. Oh. Every year I have to face replacing retiring and members, and I have received two very wonderful people. One of them is interviewing me this morning. And I want to publicly, to the whole world, thank her for the great job she did as my new awards chair.
So that 20 I slipped you earlier is good for next year, too?
I don't know how to answer that one. I mean, nothing's good in perpetuity. Not your job, not mine, but the compliment when you do a good job. The wonderful thing I have, being a show, an exhibit chair is a difficult job, and the problem is delegation. Too many of the people across the country try to do too much. And my job is to get good people and then to stand back and let them do their job with the least interference I can do. And I have a great committee. I can't praise them enough, and I praise them at every opportunity. And when they do their job, it runs moderately smooth. There are always hiccups. You can't do anything without a hiccup coming in. And each year we're looking for more volunteers. We need them. I would venture to say even the biggest and the best need people to come on board and to help. So if you're out there and you're in the Southern California area and you're not a member of a club, you should. If you're not active in any of the shows and you don't go to the local shows, you should. And if you're not a volunteer for SESCAL, you should. Thank you.
Okay, well, I guess that about wraps it up. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. So instead of opening a agenda sheet today, I'm going to encourage you to go to our YouTube channel, Professional Stamp Experts, and view our newest video of us opening a uninverted Jenny sheet live.
That really is the expensive one this time.
Yes, it's not ours, unfortunately. But you can enjoy it with us by proxy.
Yeah, pretty much. Even though I knew it was coming, you can still hear me going, in the video when you open it.
Pretty much. You can email us at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, Facebook, stampshowheretoday, on our website, www.stampshareheretoday.com, with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on our Google Voice answering machine anytime, country code 1-949-873-4298. There is also a link to a Google Voice on our website so you can make a call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hi, I'm Patricia Kaufman, and I'm here today with Confederate Postal History, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, based in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey. And I just want to say that the stamp hobby is alive and well here, and we love buying and selling stamps. We pay very, very, very good prices, so we'd rather buy 9 out of 10 collections than just a very small percentage of what we see. Also, check us out on our website at GaryPosnerInc.com. You'll see a lot of great stamps at great prices. And any questions, just feel free to call Bob at 1-800-323-4279. That's Bob Prager at 1-800-323-4279. And my cell number is 917-538-8133. Happy hunting out there.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurfs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.
Address unknown. No such number. No such zone.